Chapter 5, The Education No One Talks About. Fear. It drives more people than they will ever admit. I've known fear at different points in my life, and I won't pretend otherwise. It can be crippling for some and easily dismissed by others. Speaking only for myself, I believe a measured amount of fear is necessary. I will never sensationalize this work, but I will not trivialize it either. Law enforcement is a dangerous profession. Everyone who signs up knows that from day one, just as those who join the military. The trick is not letting fear lead. You'll encounter some officers who constantly talk about how dangerous the job is. In my experience, those are often the ones who need to settle down the most. Awareness keeps you alive. Paranoia makes you reckless. Veterans and those with prior structured experience often have an advantage, not because they're fearless, but because they understand how to follow orders without panic. Still, danger doesn't always look the way people expect. They say it's often the nice ones who get hurt. The officers have become too comfortable, too friendly, too predictable, too complacent. I used to picture an old friend of mine, Ray, in that role. One of the best paramedics I ever worked with. Big heart, bigger smile. Near the end of his career, a little portly and mostly disheveled. I could picture him walking up to a car, cheerful as ever, saying, "Good morning," and never making it back. I never told him that. I just made sure I never became complacent myself. Survival, though, isn't just about violent encounters. In a small department, survival is often about what you stay out of. If you see two coworkers in a heated discussion, the smartest person in the room is the one who leaves first. Not because they're afraid, but because overhearing something that isn't your business can change the trajectory of your career. I learned early during my sheriff's department days that you only want to know what you need to know. That does not mean ignoring misconduct or abuse. That would never fly with me. But it does mean understanding that there are many stories you can be adjacent to without being a part of. One morning I was in the squad room typing depositions when Lieutenant Richard Vanderbilt stopped in. As we talked, Canine Officer Wayne LaChapelle came in, boots covered in mud, as usual. Wayne worked hard, he trained harder, and was rarely prepared for surprise inspections. It didn't help that his brother happened to be the chief of police. When the lieutenant criticized Wayne's boots, Wayne wasn't in the mood. He merely walked out and returned later with even more mud, apologizing he just walked the dog. The lieutenant said, "Let's go, we're headed to the chief's office." I'd been on the job long enough to recognize that moment. I stopped them and I said, respectfully, "I just want to be clear. I was not here for any of this. Are we in agreement?" They both said yes. They went down the hall. I left the building. I never asked what happened. Not long after, Lieutenant Richard Vanderbilt retired. That was survival. Another part of survival is not giving anyone leverage over you. I watched people advance because they were vulnerable, financially, personally, or ethically, and therefore controllable. Even staying clean doesn't always protect you. In my case, the first thing ever used against me was sick leave, the result of multiple mandatory surgeries over the years. When I first went up for promotion, sick time, medical, documented, was cited against me, even though the position involved working with children, something I'd done successfully for years. That was my first real lesson, that decisions aren't always about merit. Years later, when I finally moved into the very position I should have held long before, there was an unexpected delay. I learned it was because a lieutenant believed that I had disclosed seeing him drinking with a detective on the night of a serious incident. I hadn't. When I confronted him directly, the issue vanished, and I was moved into the position within days. But the real education was still coming. During a sexual assault investigation, I worked with the New York State Police Computer Crimes Unit, a process I was familiar with. When I returned to the station and reviewed the digital evidence I'd been given, I immediately knew something was wrong. The disc was not from my case. It contained evidence from a separate state police investigation, one involving Chief Corsi and the Bethlehem Police. That moment changed everything. I notified my supervisor immediately. We went to the chief. I had already contacted the investigator, who knew immediately he had done something wrong. He was on his way with the correct disc to retrieve the misplaced one. What I can say is this. I've seen that look before. The one where someone realizes something has gone very wrong. Before I left the office, I was told, this does not leave my office. I knew exactly what that meant. At first, it was easier to remain silent. I truly didn't believe Chris Hughes would be convicted of what they were alleging. I believed him when he told me he thought he was setting them up and that it backfired. Chris is one of the most truthful people I know. When I later learned he'd been convicted, I was devastated. I knew information that could have helped, possibly even exonerated him, and I had protected myself instead. That realization caused damage I still carry. Eventually, when I could speak, I did. I went first to Chris's brother, Brian Hughes, then to Chris himself. I told him what had happened. I apologized. He understood. That grace matters more to me than anything else. What occurred was a broken chain of evidence, a mistake that happens and is manageable if handled honestly. The concealment of it is what speaks volumes. Disclosure is required under law. The fact that it wasn't done tells you everything you need to know. That decision to survive rather than speak followed me. I was never promoted to detective, though I did the work. After I left, my replacement was promoted immediately. It likely cost me thousands in retirement benefits. But I was reminded of something that I've been asked earlier in my career. Can you be a patrolman for life? I answered yes then. I answer yes now. Retirement didn't end survival. It changed its shape. I knew I might be a target, but I also knew I wasn't an easy one. I survived two political campaigns, and the worst they could do was draw a cartoon of me as a Nazi walking a canine. I've always lived by one rule: never give anyone dirt to use against you. That's why I turned in money found in the woods. That's why I wiped my department computer before retiring. That's why I'm writing this now. Not for profit, but for preservation. Because survival doesn't always mean escaping danger. Sometimes it means refusing to let your integrity be taken after the fact. I survived the job, I survived the politics, and I survived myself. That is the education no one talks about. That is the education of a survivor.